Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar, just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hey there, I'm Umar Pagan, MPK Pagan, alongside Ian McNally, and we're going to review Murder on the Orient Express. This is the brand new remake of the best-selling Agatha Christie novel from 1934, and it's directed by Kenneth Branagh, who apparently also stars in the movie.
Apparently. You couldn't see him behind that moustache.
Behind this magnificent moustache. It's aspirational, this moustache. It is a thing of beauty, and you will understand why when you see the film. The movie also has, like, just one of these incredible lineup of actors and actresses: Johnny Depp, Daisy Ridley, Michelle Pfeiffer, Judi Dench, Penelope Cruz, Josh Gad, Willem Dafoe, Derek Jacobi, Olivia Colman. Basically, Kenneth Branagh called up all his friends and went, "Hey, I want to make a Poirot movie. You guys in?" And they did.
They were all in.
Of course, Agatha Christie, if you don't know, and you should, is probably the best-selling author of all time. I think her books have sold over 2 billion copies,
wow,
which is insane. This movie was first made 40 years after the publishing of the book by Sidney Lumet, and it also had an all-star cast. It had Albert Finney as Poirot, it had Ingrid Bergman, Lauren Bacall, Sean Connery, Vanessa Redgrave, Jacqueline Bisset, John Gielgud, and Michael York. So, they were the Johnny Depp, Daisy Ridley, Michelle Pfeiffer of the time.
Yeah, because when you have a cast of all stars, it's not like, oh, the one biggest star is obviously the perpetrator.
Exactly, which is genius. This movie is an absolute delight. It is so much fun. You saw it before me, and you couldn't contain yourself. You were constantly tweeting. I was out of the country, and you were just relentlessly tweeting.
The big surprise for me was not who committed the crime, but rather that I actually liked a Poirot movie. I've grown up...
You're not
a fan. Yeah, so I haven't seen the Sidney Lumet version. I think that's the Albert Finney version. I've seen bits and pieces of the Peter Ustinov Death on the Nile. Is that it?
That's right, yes.
And I've seen bits and pieces of David Suchet over the years.
ITV did a TV version of Murder on the Orient Express in 2010.
But I think also I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about, I think David Suchet has done every book.
Oh, yes, he has.
As Poirot.
Absolutely. I used to watch that growing up.
Yeah. And I just couldn't get with it. It just felt like, oh, it's a murder mystery. I can just watch Columbo or Murder, She Wrote. You get overdosed to this in the 80s.
Right. So for those of you who don't know, the story is pretty straightforward. There is a murder that takes place on the Orient Express, the most luxurious
classic,
train
almost
in the world,
room mystery, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a locked room mystery. It happens to have the greatest detective in the world on board, and he has to solve it.
Yeah.
And so the Agatha Christie book was very, very popular because the resolution, the twist of this mystery was tremendous when it was first written, right? And anyone who's actually read the book for the first time or kind of experienced this mystery for the first time always has an aha moment, right? And it's very, very cool. What I love about this movie in particular is I've seen all the versions. I've read the book countless times and I was still completely in.
Yeah.
Hashtag all in for this.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said. I was saying all those other versions, I hated them. So for me I loved this movie. I came out of this and I was like, there's a point where there's a telegram delivered about having to go to Egypt. And I'm like, yes, they're going to do that sequel. I will watch that. I will gladly go see that.
And the sequel has been greenlit.
Yes, so
it
I heard.
Has. So because this is actually a big time MVP for Fox, right? It was made for $55 million. It's already taken in close to $200 million, and it hasn't even opened everywhere yet. And they're saying that by the time it opens in everywhere, all over the world, it might hit close to $300 million, which is just like tremendous for a $55 million movie, right?
And it's all down to Branagh. I mean, the moustache is magnificent. And the
we should do a podcast. Just I left the cinema. I wanted to set up a Twitter account for that moustache, but I'm sure it's already done. I'm sure someone's done it.
But not only is it the moustache, and not only is it the humour and the character that he brings to Poirot, because his difference this time is like, maybe I've missed this from before, but he makes the point of he sees the world as it should be. So whenever anything is wrong, it's easier to spot.
I've never read that version or seen that version play out.
But it's a nice take.
It's a nice take.
And it's also using, you know, the trope that's from things like House or Monk or all that, where it is that the detective is saddled with this skill. It's not. It's more of a curse than a blessing. Even though everyone else hails him as the great detective Poirot, he's like, he would much rather be able to just eat eggs that weren't the same size for breakfast.
And go on holiday.
But he cannot.
He cannot.
Yes.
Now, the book opens in Aleppo. The movie doesn't. The movie actually opens in
Feed
Jerusalem.
From Star Wars.
Right. Yes, exactly. It opens in Jerusalem. Jerusalem with Poirot at the climax of another case. And I think this was perfect because this is for a generation that probably hasn't seen those David Suchet stuff or read any Agatha Christie, right? And so you need the first 5 minutes to show off how cool Poirot is, and it does it brilliantly.
Three of those minutes are a kid delivering eggs.
Yes.
And like his first words on screen are just, eggs are delivered, he looks at them, you don't even see his face, and you just hear, no, no, no. And then the kid runs off again, and everyone is at the beck and call of this guy. And the solving of the crime at the Wailing Wall and leaving a cane in a nice place.
Oh, genius.
Works so well. And again, we'll get to Branagh's multiple things that he did to this movie, but like the little small lines of dialogue that he says to people, like one guy, he sees he has a problem with unstraightened ties. And when he just says like, please straighten your tie, it is bothering me, and I'll escort you somewhere. And he just says, no, we must never meet again. Like, it's not just like, I have to leave you now. It's never again darken my doorway because of you and your sloppy ties.
What's great about this movie coming out in 2017 is that there's absolutely nothing to desecrate.
Mm.
Because it's for a new generation, right? Yeah. I mean, there is a generation of people who love Finney's portrayal of Poirot, which is completely different. He was kind of chubby and a little, and he had all these interesting tics.
They're generally kind of chubby, and I think what he's going to describe him as having an egg-shaped head, right?
And all these conscious and unconscious tics throughout. And it's interesting because it's very close to, I guess, what Christie probably envisioned Poirot to be. Kenneth Branagh is not that character.
He's dashing.
He's dashing. He's kind of cool.
And the climax of this movie, again, we'll get on to getting onto Branagh as director. The climax of this movie, there's an awful lot of shots of him just like from the shoulders up standing in front of a train with slightly ruffled hair. And I want that framed on my wall.
I do. And because you know how all of these Agatha Christie books and movies end. It's him facing off with a group of people explaining what happened and cluing you in to all of the hints that you may have seen over the last hour and a half. Or
the ones that you don't know because they're in the world of the movie, which is... there's a slightly cheaty, but just
correct.
Him in his collar popped standing in front of a train in the snow in a tunnel just looks beautiful.
No, but the way that scene was executed with him standing in front of this group of people laid out like the Last Supper.
Literally like the Last Supper. It's like the moment I saw that, I laughed out loud. It's like, bit on the nose there, Ken.
But it was so compelling, and he's just monologuing.
Yeah.
And he's monologuing about the crime. He's monologuing about his own self-reflection of what it means to be innocent, guilty, and a detective. It's tremendous writing.
Yeah, it's so good.
I love this movie.
And that directorial flair runs through it. There's a lovely long shot of the chaos of Turkey, right? It's at the beginning they get on the train in Constantinople?
Constantinople, yes.
Yes. And it's absolute chaos. And then a long shot that walks as he walks through the train from outside, and he passes all the characters. I think it's repeated almost shot for shot at the end in reverse as he walks off the train.
Yeah.
And there's an overhead shot at some point where there are people walking through the carriages. Like, they use the train in really clever ways. He shoots through reflections in glass, not really trying to say anything about the duality of man, which most, you know, film schools...
I think you might read into it, but I don't know if that's what he's doing.
It just looks cool.
It just looks cool. And even when the murder happens, right, you don't see the body. In the original Sidney Lumet version, you see the body right away.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's taken it from the top of the train. He's shooting downwards, and you hear all of this dialogue taking place, but you just don't get to peer into the room where the murder happened. And I thought that was really clever.
And then to follow that with, until the moment where he says, well, let us ask the victim.
Yes.
And then we start to see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Everyone else is, as well, is just on point.
Oh, no, no. I mean, that for me is why this movie works so well, right? Because, you know, the dialogue is witty and powerful, and we know all of that. The mystery still holds up. And the only reason the mystery holds up is because all of those performances are stellar. I mean, even Johnny Depp, who's been annoying me of late in all of his movies because he's playing some rendition of Jack Sparrow, in this one is good.
Yeah. And there's a whole menagerie around him. I mean, it's great to see Derek Jacobi. It's just weird seeing him play that accent rather than he's generally more posh. So he's playing the more butler type.
Okay, so here's the thing. I forgot Derek Jacobi was still alive.
Oh,
I
really?
Was so happy to see him in this movie. No jokes. I mean, I loved I, Claudius, and I was just like, Derek Jacobi!
Oh, he turns up all the time. Usually in, what's the vampire movies?
Twilight?
No, the ones with the leather. And the guns.
Oh, Underworld.
Underworld.
Was he in Underworld?
He was in one of the Underworld movies.
Oh, God.
I think it's his fault. Underworld is his fault. but the moment where Dame Judi Dench and Olivia Colman walking on the train is like, just the moment they walk into the last car is the dining car. And they just walk in and there's a bar beside them. And it's just like, these people have a story. Look at these. Because Olivia Colman's face, she's standing 2-3 steps behind Dame Judi Dench. And, you know, it's Dame Judi Dench. Of course she's going to command the room, but to do that through film and through the use of a coat is amazing.
But everyone does that. Yeah. When you meet Daisy Ridley's character for the first time, I mean, there is a framing of these characters which I think mystery thriller directors get down. Mm. There's a framing that immediately leads you to question everything they say and all of their motives.
Yeah.
And Kenneth Branagh pulls that off really
well. Josh Gad is shifty from the moment he walks on screen.
No, I mean, and that's the great thing, right? Because all of Agatha Christie's words are still there. I mean,
A soul of the city is in its bread. Is that an Agatha Christie line?
No, I think that's a Kenneth Branagh and his screenwriter line. But what I mean is, there are lines like, McQueen leaned in attentively. Yeah. I mean, the way Agatha Christie would describe her characters, you can see play out on screen. There was a neatly pressed kimono with a dragon embedded on it. And you know, all of that is there. You see those moments and you're like, that's from the book.
Oh, nice.
It's a great little, all those great little descriptors are played out really, really well.
And just visually as well, like, because the TV versions have been around for years because they're relatively easy to shoot. You've got a single location, you've got your actors in there, fine. But things like Branagh walking on top of the train in the snow and Constantinople, just the shots from the air of that. And that's what I compared it to Theed from Star Wars, because it does look like, you know, it's these giant towers and like Jabba's palace, those kind of like kettle pot buildings. But it looks stunning, and these like the CGI work is amazing because the lighting on those things are great. As the train pulls away from the station and at the beginning, it's amazing looking.
And
as also planning, because for $55 million, you're not going to get all those people in the same room at the same time, unless they're doing a favor for Ken.
I think that's the only reason they would be able to get all those people. But you're right, the planning of schedules and the shooting of those scenes. Yeah, it must have been tremendous. I mean, I love the locked room mystery and. When you think about it, nothing in this movie takes place outside of, say, 100 meters.
Yep.
It's between a train carriage and a tunnel and the bridge that the train carriage is set on.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
The resolution is similar?
The resolution is similar.
Ah, okay.
So the resolution...
Again, although I couldn't get on board with all those other versions, so I never actually made it to the end of any of the Murder on the Orient Express versions.
Well, so what happens is there are some things that happen in the middle of this movie. There's a reveal about what is the Armstrong baby, right? Mm. That actually happens at the very beginning of even the Sidney Lumet film. It starts with a prologue of that. And I think the director felt it was necessary to kind of lead the audience into this mystery going, oh, what was that thing in the beginning? How does it tie into all of this?
Yeah, because it does have an impact on the story. And I was like, huh?
Yeah, so in this movie, it like, happens in the middle.
Yeah, because it kind of feels a little cheaty. It's like, you know, I think many authors have talked about, like, if you're writing a battle or you're trying to write guerrilla warfare or you're trying to write a murder mystery, you start at the end and work your way forward and leave the clues for yourself as you work backwards, or work forwards, rather. And in this, it felt a little bit like that, because I'm like, I don't know who these people are talking about are. It's like, I mean, if I've been reading the newspapers in 1934, maybe.
Maybe. also, we just got to talk a little bit more about Branagh's Poirot.
Yes.
Because I think the depiction of the character, while different, really does fit in with the 2017 sensibility of, I guess, who we think are good detectives and why. You mentioned House and Monk. And of course, these are characters that were based on people like Poirot and Sherlock Holmes and a barrage of other literary detectives, right? And so for Branagh to take something that we've seen so many times and still make it fresh and unique and interesting.
Yeah, he turned lead into gold. Like, I did not like Poirot. I love Poirot now.
I left the movie wanting to go back in and watch it again and really craving that sequel because I want to see more of these adventures. I mean, yes, the performances are fantastic, but he carries this film almost single-handedly.
Yeah. The way he deals with people. I mean, there's a beautiful, the guy he works with a lot, Bouac.
Monsieur Bouac.
Monsieur Bouac. Their initial interaction where...
They meet in a kitchen.
They meet in the kitchen and he immediately identifies what's going on with Bouac and it's hilarious. And it's just the film is filled with these little tiny investigations on his behalf into people's character and revealing things. And they just, every single one of them lands. And most of them are funny. They're either funny or kind of chilling in some way when it comes to the murder and figuring out what's going on. But the funny ones, everyone lands. Like, it's not like there's a bad joke in this movie.
No.
And I was not expecting it to be funny at all.
No, same here. I wasn't expecting it to be funny. I wasn't expecting it to be, well, to have such a clear directorial vision as well.
Yes.
Because it's very easy, I guess, when you're the director and the main star who's supposed to carry this film, that something falls short. He pulls off the acting gig absolutely perfectly. It's pitch perfect. And the directorial vision is actually very strong because, like we said earlier, we get a completely different rendition of this locked room mystery, which is something we haven't necessarily seen before. It's even got certain Wes Anderson-y moments and placements that are quite interesting. There's a lot of symmetry that's going on in certain scenes. But yet, it's not overdone. It just feels like it fits in with the time and the era. You know how the Wes Anderson stuff feels unreal? It feels like you're looking at a pop-up book. It's stagey, right? This never feels stagey.
No. I mean, it has more... After he did Thor, it kind of some of his movies didn't seem to have a Kenneth Branagh stamp, but this feels like it definitely has like a stamp on it.
And I'm glad you mentioned stagey, because that's the other thing about a lot of Agatha Christie adaptations. They feel like they were meant for stage, because the dialogue is often very theatrical.
And you can do the whole thing in the dining car and maybe one other set.
Correct. Meanwhile, this one had very, well, non-theatrical, very cinema-driven dialogue, right? It was, the quips were great. The chemistry between the characters were developed in very, very fast and quick order.
There's action scenes.
There are action scenes, exactly.
Even when he started doing Poirot, I don't see David Suchet running around outside the train.
I've always seen David Suchet as an old man. I don't know why.
Yeah. I didn't like that one. I like this one. This mustache has mustaches.
Oh, it does.
And I was also incredibly happy there was no Imagine Dragons in the actual movie.
They only used it in the trailer. All of the music in the movie was time appropriate.
Yes.
Era appropriate. Yes. Murder on the Orient Express is now showing in cinemas. We strongly urge you to go check out this movie. We want to know what you think. At the screening I was at, Ian, we had a BFM screening. We had at the movie screening. It wasn't unanimous.
No.
Some people left going, eh.
Maybe for some people, Kenneth Branagh is this generation's David Suchet, and maybe in 20 years' time when Zac Efron does it, they'll love it.
You don't. You take that back. You don't even say things like that. You can tweet us. I'm on at Umar Fagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
This is At The Movies on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.